Welcome to Book Spectrum. I'm your host, Chris Cordani. On our show, we talk with some seasoned authors and new writers from various professions across the spectrum. I have with me Michael Kelly, a man who left the world of big-time finance on Wall Street for a more peaceful life outside of the traffic backups, big boards, and briefcases, for a more serene one with trees, air, and trails, where he can be with his own mind. For some of us, that could be pretty dangerous. However, Michael has written the sequel to his first book, The Lost Theory, so let's see what's on his mind today and talk about the new one, The Devil's Calling. Michael Kelly, welcome to Book Spectrum.
Well, thank you, Chris. I appreciate you having me on.
I'm glad you're on, and I'm really intrigued by this book because I do enjoy a good science fiction novel. You have said in the past, though, you've always wanted to pursue literature and creative writing, but you didn't, even though you were a young college student enamored by this world. What made you kind of put that aside and go into law, business, and investment management?
Well, I guess you'll guess my age. It was the 1970s when I graduated from college, and I've always had a great imagination. And back then, I had a fictional, imaginative view of the struggling artist and what it would mean for me to become a writer. And sounds like exaggeration, but I truly believed, and there were some self-destructive tendencies that I was already following, that to become a writer, which would not be a normal path for someone in my family, would have been basically death to me. So I followed my father and brother into law initially, and then had a really great 30-something year run on Wall Street. It was actually quite rewarding, but I never lost my love of literature and got to retire early to now pursue it.
What made you change your career and dive back into that original love for writing?
Well, on Wall Street, one becomes relatively old, around 40. And I was pushing up towards 50 at the time and no longer enjoying it. And I didn't know initially that I would start writing a trilogy, which I'm now, as you mentioned, on the second book of. I initially moved away and followed some really passionate studies into quantum physics and spirituality that ultimately led me to a pseudo theory. And that theory led to me writing the three books.
The book The Devil's Calling reflects, Michael, on your post-Wall Street explorations, like learning about Eastern mysticism and quantum physics. That's a 180. What interested you in those quite diverse fields of research?
Well, they seem diverse, but I was actually most interested in the intersection of the two. Quantum physics at the very smallest particle level that they can observe, reality seems to dance in and out of view. And from nothing to something, back to nothing, which seemed much more consistent with the Buddhist philosophy, which I was studying as well at the same time. And the two, it was fascinating to see the overlap and how science seems to be moving towards this sense of interconnectedness of all things in the quantum field or in consciousness itself.
I have with me Michael Kelly on Book Spectrum. His book is The Devil's Calling. It's a sequel to his The Lost Theory book. Michael, take us back to The Lost Theory. How does The Devil's Calling draw from and move that story forward?
Well, The Lost Theory was a quest in search of a theory of everything that was supposedly discovered by the protagonist's best friend before he mysteriously died. And the protagonist starts off in a very circumscribed and narrow comfort zone. And the three books are supposed to track his arc as he becomes and finds himself put into challenging, adventurous situations and lives a bigger, bolder life. And in the second book, The Devil's Calling, he's discovered what love is. He's discovered what oneness is, as called by the family in the book, Big Love. But he has placed all that on his love interest, and who's a rock star physicist, Emily Edens. And that attachment and devotion to her drives him to vow to protect her from forces that she is confronting in artificial intelligence that are emerging at the time in 2027.
Michael, you mentioned that theory of everything. That's something you developed before writing the book, your own theory of everything.
Yes, and it's a pseudo theory. But one thing I think that goes underappreciated is the Big Bang is just a theory. And it's a theory that has numerous holes. Black holes.
A lot more scientists have jumped onto that steady state theory, or the universe was there and there wasn't really a Big Bang theory.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I can't take any credit for that, but the theory that I developed and is utilized in the books is called the theory of constant creation. And it's much more in line with a multiverse theory and or a theory of a hologram-like projection. It's not actually a hologram. And the Big Bang just, again, has so many questions that it doesn't answer. That, you know, I think are better answered by a view of consciousness perhaps being the primary state into which everything collapses and reemerges each instant in our expanding universe.
Well, it's also the fun theory. It's the one where people can say, hey, well, there's a big explosion and everything happened after that. So I get it. That was exciting back when I was much younger, and a lot of the scientists were on that, onto that bend, if you will. But again, like you said, people are kind of searching for alternatives to that, and that's one of them, the old steady state or the constant creation. But your theory of everything, I believe everybody should try to find their own theory of everything.
Yeah, that's really what the books are about. The big question posed by each book in turn is that once you have everything you need to survive, how can that search for the theory of everything or self-realization not be the primary driver and not the focus of your life? He poses it in each book and moves slowly and surely towards that end.
You just mentioned it, self-realization. That's part of the theory of everything. It doesn't have to be figuring out where all the dimensions are or anything like that. A lot of that can be, hey, where do I stand in the middle of all of this? And this self-realization theme is very important in The Devil's Calling, and like you said, in your other book as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that one of the holes, I think, in the Big Bang Theory is that if you look at the expanding universe from any single point, including yourself, the universe is infinitely expanding in all directions from that point. And I have a hard time reconciling that expansion from every point with a singularity of a Big Bang 14 billion years ago.
Michael Kelly is with me on Book Spectrum. We're talking about his most recent book, The Devil's Calling. Both of your works point to the emerging struggle between new and developing technologies and the spirit and consciousness of humanity. The struggle, though, is real and in our lifetime. Looking around the world, we have a social credit system in China regulating people's behavior. The Alibaba company recently revealed at the World Economic Forum convention, they're working on technology to track people's energy use. Most people can be hunted down in the U.S. through their driving habits, GPS, laptops, and cell phones. You take this a few steps further in The Devil's Calling, and I was hoping I could say a lot of steps further, but a few, unfortunately, seems to be correct.
Yeah, one of the premises of The Devil's Calling, which I think everyone's coming to acknowledge, is this acceleration that's going on in technology. So what used to take 20 years to get us to where we are with the current state of technology will only take 5 years in The Devil's Calling, because it takes place in 2027. And the technology that it develops is brain-computer interfacing. There's an Elon Musk company, Neuralink, which already has a video of a chip in a monkey's mind allowing it to play Pong simply by its mind. No handheld instrument.
It's playing mind games.
The mind game. And in 5 years, the Devil Calling posits that most of humanity is looking to become wired in. And the potential of a hive mind mentality that the hero's love interest, Emily Eden, the rock star quantum physicist, and constant creationist, is determined to make sure there's an ethical rollout of. And so it pits this advanced AI and specter of a new society against developing psi phenomenon of telepathy and precognition, which are more consistent with spirituality.
There's also an element of action adventure, and you do insert your own theory of everything into there. I have to ask, before we move on with a little bit of the story, who are your influences when it comes to writing? Because you seem to have a pretty decent mix.
Well, when you mentioned the action adventure, I wouldn't say he's one of my major influences, but I just heard Stephen King describe his writing style as, I'm paraphrasing, sticking ordinary people into extraordinary situations and seeing how they react. And this is what happens along the course of this adventure. Sean Byron McQueen is consistently put into the most extraordinary of circumstances as a quite ordinary man with flaws and other, like all that we all have, and moves forward. But as far as my inspirations, I think they fall into maybe two or three categories. There's literary inspirations. But I would put Shakespeare, the Romantic poets, and William Butler Yeats into. And there's spiritual inspirations of Eckhart Tolle, Ramana Maharishi. He was the guru who kept asking the question or telling us to ask the question of I am, and keep going back to the I am and the source of where that comes from. And I guess I don't know if he's a great, good man. I don't know if he's a bad man. But in the industry, I would say Elon Musk is a bit of an inspiration to me. And as I mentioned, his Neuralink and brain-computer interface work, which is probably the least reported of his ventures, is part of the driver and inspiration for the story of The Devil's Calling.
Michael, I like the name Sean Byron McQueen, but I keep thinking about calling him Steve. That's a different story, but I do like the name Sean Byron McQueen.
He did identify with Steve McQueen in the first book and all his movies.
I do like to ask the question because a lot of times there's a reason certain authors give certain names to their characters. Why Sean Byron McQueen? And he has three names, like most assassins, by the way. You ever notice that? Assassins, the people who assassinate major figures have three names, like James Earl Ray or John Wilkes Booth. Must be a requirement.
Yeah, I think, well, a few things about the name. One is, what I found disconcerting as I've written these books is friends and other people and just people I don't know associate Sean Byron McQueen with me. I actually kill off his best friend, Dylan Byrne, in the first or second chapter of The Lost Theory. And Dylan was the one who was the investment banker turned esoteric studier of quantum physics and spirituality who comes up with a theory. So I thought I kill myself off, then no one can claim or burden me with whatever Sean Byron McQueen thinks or says. But it didn't work out so well. As far as his name, I've always liked the Irish names, Michael Kelly. And Sean Byron McQueen also, he's also an author and a literature professor. And he starts off a little bit pompous. So the three names gave him somewhat an air of pomposity. And, a lot of the great poets, William Butler Yeats, T.S. Eliot, have all gone either by three initials or three names. So I thought that was also suiting for the main character. And of course, Byron is a great romantic poet.
Yeah, Lord Byron. Michael, the point we discussed before about how close we are to something like what you're describing, or how close we could be if the proper technology gets into the wrong hands. This is even reflected in people who are more professional than we are. Like I was reading your reviews. There was a lady, Laura Johnson, former CIA WMD analyst, who called your book a page turner and discussing how a spiritual life and technologies and how humanity can be stripped from the temptations of having all sorts of power thanks to technology is fairly accurate or a great possibility. That seems to be, as a reader, quite alarming, but as an author, hey, I guess I'm on the money here, and that's a good thing, right?
Yes. One of the things that's annoying about being a writer is you always focus more on the negative reviews, but no, Laura, I had the pleasure of meeting in passing at some workshop, and then I asked if she would be a critical reader, early reader, a beta reader of the book, and was very pleased with the comments she gave me, as well as obviously the nice and very gracious review she provided The Devil's Calling.
Michael Kelly is with me on Book Spectrum. His book is The Devil's Calling. What questions do you hope The Devil's Calling helps your readers begin to consider?
Well, again, the big question posed is if you believe self-realization, awakening, finding a more authentic, self-actualized self that might lead to greater happiness, love, and bliss in your life and in the world is possible, is real, then how can that not be once you have a roof and food and or can take care of your family, not your primary focus, or at least a very important focus of your life to move in that direction? So that's a big overarching question. And then beneath that are all the other questions of, how does one rein in one's ego, settle rampant and raging thoughts that go on in the mind? And how real are these, some people would call magic or psi phenomenon of telepathy, precognition, remote viewing, which I will pause to mention that have all been proved scientifically to be real. Statistically, they far outstrip any chance of coincidence or happenstance in when they're studied. But the big question is left that they don't know how they work. They know that telepathy works. They know there is precognition, but they don't know how it works. So I think there's some of the big questions that I try to get people to start thinking about because I find them so fascinating and energizing.
I say keep one eye on The Devil's Calling and keep the other eye on what's going on in the world today, because if we don't watch out, we could wind up in this kind of situation. And yes, by 2027. I know that's a little bit far-fetched possibly for me to say here, but perhaps years beyond, technology could cause us to lose humanity, although we could balance ourselves between using technology properly and not losing such the human inside us, that is. Michael, this is the second book in a trilogy. What might we expect to see in book three?
Well, it sounds a little grim, but book three is all about death. In the first two books, there are a lot of friends and loved ones of Sean Byron McQueen who die. In the third book, he's kind of has to face his own death. There's a vicious death threat that hangs over his head I won't tell you how long in the book. And alongside that, there's a parallel track of the threat to all humanity. In the second book, it's in 2027. It's announced in 2036 that aliens have made contact and are going to arrive. So there's that threat or perceived threat to all humanity from the aliens coming in September 9th, 2036, and whether they will bring annihilation, enslavement, or enlightenment, possibly. So it's about death, I think, is the way to say what the third book is.
I hate to say that this is going to be intriguing rather than depressing. Because if you take a look at the book here, The Devil's Calling, if you've got a chance to read the first book, The Lost Theory, this is going to be exciting. I know a lot of death is coming, but the fact is, it all comes to a head, hopefully, in book three. Michael Kelly, thank you very much for being here with us on Book Spectrum.
Well, Chris, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Don't forget the book's called The Devil's Calling. Pick it up on Amazon or wherever you buy your books digitally. Or maybe you want to take a trip to that bookstore. Those are still fun and they're still out there. I enjoy a good bookstore, especially if there's coffee served over there. But that's a different story for a different day. Thank you again for listening to us on Book Spectrum. I'm Chris Cordani.